Wondering what this is, aren't you? I was carrying this across the parking lot yesterday, bringing it with me, and somebody was wondering what it was. What is that that you're carrying? Probably with a comment as well, right, Michael? My reply was, well, this is tomorrow's message. Here it is. This is the message for the day. Maybe it doesn't look like it, but let's see what we can do with it for just a moment. I think it is the message for the day, and I think it has two messages, and probably what you see depends upon where you stand and what you think and what your perceptions of reality are. If the light is just right, well, I'm getting it just right there for a second, and the sun reflects on it back at you. Have you ever noticed that this tends to look more like a mirror? A looking glass, and there's a reason they may call it that or may have in ages past. If you catch the light just right, you can see your own reflection, your own image looking back at you. Of course, it's reversed, so it's not quite you, but it is you. And sometimes I think that's what we see, and that's all we see, some of us. We see our own image reflected back at us. And sometimes if you look beyond, and you're just not narcissistic on that day or self-absorbed, you see what's behind you. You stop looking at the face that you see looking back at you, and you look at the background. And I think some of us live our lives that way. We think life is all about us, about our hopes, about our dreams, our ambitions and our aspirations. We see ourselves. And sometimes when things aren't going well, we tend to look where we have come from in the rearview mirror. We look backward over our shoulders to the things that we know that are familiar to us and not foreign, or the things that we think we know, even as we edit and revise our own understanding of our own life and history. We look backwards. But it's awfully difficult to drive forward when you're looking in the rearview mirror. I think today God is offering us something different. And I know it's a looking glass for some. And some will look and they'll see their own reflection, but others will see something different. You know what I really think this is in the light of the scripture that we're going to take a look at in just a moment? You know what this really is? Nobody dare tackle that one, right? Might not be the answer just expecting. I think this is a window, and it's a window of opportunity. A window of opportunity. And instead of seeing our own reflection, when we look through it, we see something outside ourselves. We look through to somewhere else. We look past and beyond where we are right now, to the future, a distant place. And sometimes the images are a little bit fuzzy and far off. But when God breaks into our lives, when he opens a window and grants us a window of opportunity, he allows us to see perhaps what he sees, and it's another vision. And sometimes when God comes close to us and brings a word like he does to Abraham long ago, he telescoped that distance. What was distant and far off in the future, that which was a little bit fuzzy and perhaps almost inconceivable, God brought close. And he made a promise to Abram. That was his name before it was changed to Abraham. Anybody know what Abram means? Exalted father. But nothing could have been further from the truth, because Abram, while married, he had no children, which meant that he had no social security, no retirement, because in those days it was your children who would provide for you in your older age. Good to know, isn't it, Carol, that they're going to provide for you? The hope of the future lay in having children who would take care of you. The government wasn't there to provide Medicare and social security. Not sure our government will be there to provide for that either after the last couple weeks. But I think God has a window of opportunity. And I want to take you to look at Abram this morning, because I believe that there is an open window. And when God opens a window from heaven, he telescopes the distance and he has something to show us in relationship about himself and what he has for us. So if we could put the scriptures up there, Aaron, let's go take a look for a moment. We're going to take you to Genesis 12. as we just take a moment to listen what the Word of God has to say to us. And I want you to take just a moment and think about this. If you were Abram, what this might have been like. And you've grown up, and Abram, as we're about to discover, was 75 years old, married to a woman named Sarai, or Sarah, as we have a habit of saying. And they had been together for a very long time, Abram living in his own land with his father, his kinfolk living nearby. They had household gods. That's what they knew. His father probably had some things that we might call idols, but they were probably graven images of one sort or another. Household gods. Well, that's what they had for the deity in their home. But on this occasion, something different happens that must have been incredibly disturbing, incredibly challenging, and perhaps alluring as well. Something happened to Abram when God showed up. This is the story. Now, the Lord said to Abram, exalted father, which tells you that nothing could have been further from the truth or Abram's experience at that moment. Now, the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. How many of you would like to be a great nation? Nobody? All right, a couple people being honest. You'd like something great to happen, and you'd like God to make it happen for you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. What a promise. Through you, or me, perhaps all of us, through this church, all families, all tribes of the world will be blessed, all people groups. So Abram, what did he do? Verse 4, Abram went forth. He went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him, his nephew, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed for the journey. And so began his sojourn, Abram's with God. What a powerful story this is. What I think we find this morning is that we meet a deity that we don't really understand. We meet a God who is different. And this wasn't the typical household God that Abram's father would have known or those who had come before him. Because instead of taking from human beings, this is a God who has a different desire and a different mission. This is a God who actually, instead of inviting, encouraging, or demanding us to bless him, this is a God who wants to give a blessing to Abram and his descendants and to all the families of the world through him. This is a God who endeavors to bless us. What do you think about that? I suppose in this therapeutic age where many people come to get, what have you got for me today, God? I suppose this isn't too surprising. We may read right past it, but in those days, I think people would have been a little bit more intrepid coming into the presence of the living God. To think that the living God, there is a God who wants to bless us, I think that would have astonished Abram and his wife Sarah. There is a God who wants to bless us. This is a total reversal of the usual way that the divine-human relationship works. This is not a God, in the moment at least, who is demanding praise of us or that we bless him. This is a God who comes to serve, and that's more completely demonstrated in the new covenant when Jesus is said to us to demonstrate the servant heart of our Father God. What an extraordinary difference. But this is not a God who does not have no expectations, because he does. But what he wants to establish is a covenant of trust and mutual trust. And what I would liken it to a marriage. And I think just looking at the time and I've been thinking about it this morning. I think we're going to look at the concept of covenant for 3 weeks. I think it's probably going to take us that long. And over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be looking today at Genesis 12, next week Genesis 15, and the following week Genesis 17. And I think there are three movements that have to do with covenant. And today what I'd like to introduce to you is what I just want to call the courtship phase. And later on, we're going to be talking about the engagement, what happens when they start to go steady and take it seriously, when God makes a promise and seals that promise with a symbol. We'll talk about that more next week And the following week, we're going to talk about the marriage and then the consummation that leads to the fulfillment of God's promise, because he promises offspring. He promises Abram that he's going to come through for him to provide a future. Future generations, children, offspring, a great nation. But right now, what does Abram have? Nothing but what some of you have. Empty pockets? He doesn't have much. Not much at all to go on. Let's think for a moment what we know. Just about promises. Anybody make promises? Some of them we make and manage to keep. Some of them we make and then we break. We don't mean to. There's something about promises, and we perhaps have all made them. Imagine, well, I could see Jonathan and Alexis promising later, now, Jack, if you just behave in worship today, we'll get you a creamy this afternoon. There's a future promise, a promise of something that might appeal to Jack. He might say, ooh, that meets with my desires. You scream, I scream, we all scream for ice cream. Yeah, I believe it because I want it. It appeals to me. On the other hand, he might also listen and he might say, okay, just because he knows that he can't make that happen for himself. Apart from you all making it happen for him, he can't drive. He's probably, well, he might walk down to the right place, but he probably can't get there by himself. He's going to need your help to get there. You're the authority figures in his life. Apart from you and you fulfilling that promise that you've made for him, it's not going to happen. And the other thing that might happen here is that he actually believes in it just because, and says, okay, because he loves you. He trusts you. He believes in you. He says, okay, mom and dad promise. So if he comes up to Tim or Donna or I, says, I'm getting a creamy later, he knows it. How does he know it? Because they said so. Because they gave their word. They made a promise. That's a treaty. That's an agreement. One could even say, if you wanted to use biblical language, that's a covenant. Now, there are lots of different covenants and different kinds of agreements that are made. We know about some of them. How many of you have ever signed to borrow money for a house or perhaps for a vehicle? So you've signed the loan papers, and we all know what that's like. And when you look at those papers, there are stipulations, what the lender is willing to do for you and what you need to do in response as the borrower, what the expectations are. Those are called stipulations. And they typically don't call them this in contracts that we sign today. But in the old days, they simply would have called that language. They would have talked about blessings and curses. Now, this is what's going to happen to you, Jeff, if you fail to keep your promise, if you don't make a payment. Just when you thought nobody in the world cared about you, just try missing a car payment or a mortgage payment, and you'll see how much somebody suddenly cares about you. They've made an investment in your future. They want you to stay healthy and do well because they prosper if you do well. They care. So that's called blessings and curses. Actually, in our language, in a contract today, this is just simply what's going to happen to you. It's a series of warnings. If you fail to keep your word, and that's all the boilerplate and the small print that we seldom read through. We kind of, we know something will happen. We just don't know quite what. If we fail to meet our obligations. But we've given our word and we sign at the bottom. That's a contract. But the covenants were a little bit different. And in the biblical era, there were different kinds of covenants. One was called a suzerain covenant. And all that means is somebody more powerful is making an agreement with somebody less powerful. So that a very powerful king or ruler in those days, with his military might have made an agreement with a smaller client state. And the way they would do it is like this. Say, Mike, we're going to protect you, and we will offer you protection. And in return, what you will offer us is tribute. In other words, you're going to owe us tax money. And oh, by the way, the implication is if you don't and choose not to, we will be at war and we will crush you. So there was always that veiled threat. So that was called a suzerain covenant, the one more powerful. What are we offering you? Protection. That's what we're offering you. That was a suzerain covenant. But there was another kind that was called a parity covenant, an agreement between equals. Can you think of an example of that today, a parity covenant? Where do we still use the word covenant? Marriage. That's one of the few places. I guess there are others as well, but that's one of the most common in marriage. And what I want to say to you is there's a real difference between a contract and a covenant. A contract, as we know it typically in the world today, documents and details what will happen to you if you fail to keep your word. So they're always hedging those who make these contracts their bet, because the suspicion is that you may fail to keep your word. But a covenant was just opposite of that. Covenants are short and sweet, because the thought process behind them is you will keep your word. You made a promise, you will honor it, you keep it, you will succeed. It's based on trust. Have you ever noticed how really simple marriage vows are? For better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, as long as we both shall live. You see, there's nothing there about failure, because the expectation is that you will not. You've given your word. Of course you will succeed. It's based on trust. How do I know that Kath will keep her promise to me? Because she said so. Because I trust that she will. Have you ever read that verse in Hebrews 11:6? Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Those who come to God must believe that God exists, that he's real, and is a rewarder of those who come to him, who take him at his word, who place their trust in him. You want to know what Abram was about? It was about placing his trust in God. What if God is still looking for Abrams in the world today? I don't think every Abram has been located. God is still looking for people who are willing to be game changers. You see, God has a vision of what we can be, you and I, that may be greater than anything that we have conceived or imagined for ourselves. Some of us have thought about the impact and the influence that we would like to have on others around us in the world. Is there anybody here who doesn't want to make a difference? And a godly difference in the world? We want the world to be a better place when our time here ends. We want to leave behind a good impact. We want our children to be able to say, my father taught me this. My mother, she was incredible. These are the values that they gave and taught me, that shaped me. Honesty, integrity, a love for God, a hope for the future. But Abram, well, Abram didn't have a great hope for the future because how old was he? 75 years old. You see, age is rapidly catching up and overtaking him. He's aging out. Sarah was a little bit younger, but still, they don't have any children. They were barren, and infertility was a description of what their experience of life was. Their future, they didn't have a future. Not of their own. Not of their own flesh and blood. They didn't have a future except through those around them. And then comes God. And this is a different kind of God. He's not the usual household God. This is the God who shows up with lavish promises. That's why I call the movement we're talking about today in Genesis 12, promises, promises. Because that's what God has to offer. Remember Jack and the Beanstalk? He took the valuable family cow, the one and only, and what did he trade it for? A handful of magic beans? You got to be kidding. Who cares? Magic beans. Yep, there's a sucker born every minute. Jack comes home with a handful of magic beans. That's all he has. And when God shows up, I don't think it was a lot different for Abram. All he has is a promise, because that's what God is offering, a promise for the future. And what an extraordinary promise it is. Notice first, though, that when God comes, he shows Abram what it's going to cost him, because it will cost something. So what does he tell him? To go forth. Let me just grab the words again. To go forth from what? Threefold. From your country, your people, or your relatives, your kinfolk, and from your father's house. Those three things. Now, these are the things that are familiar. These are the things that provide security for Abram. So go from your country. Leave your kindred, those whom you can rely on, those who would offer protection, even military protection, from threats, from harm, from danger. And finally, leave your own father, your own mother. Leave their household and trust me. That's what God is saying. That's all he has to offer, Abram. That's what he offers. He's offering a handful of, well, shall we liken it to magic beans? It's a promise. of a different future, but it's going to cost Abram something, and what will it cost him? Everything. Because he's going to have to leave behind everything that's familiar, that's known to him, all the relationships, and he's going to have to trade them in for a relationship relying on one. This new God that he doesn't know, with no proven track record, not for Abram. He doesn't know if he's reliable. He doesn't know if he's trustworthy. He doesn't know. He just knows he's making an offer and putting it on the table. Here's my proposal. What do you say, Abram? Are you in? Will you go with me? I'm offering something that you haven't been able to secure or get for yourself. I'm offering children. I'm offering you a future, what you've wanted. And you see, Abram, can you imagine him not responding or wanting to? Ooh, the desire of his heart. Now talk about targeting and tapping into the deepest hurts and the deepest hopes at all the same time. Here's God laser targeting. I mean, he catches him where he's vulnerable, right there at the soft spot. A future, that's exactly, and your children, exactly what Abram doesn't have. And God is saying, I can do that for you, but you're not going to get it unless you're willing to leave. You're going to have to trade in your relationship with your country. You will be an expatriate. And I'm not talking about the football team here, okay? An expat. He says you're going to have to leave your kinfolk, those you've relied on and trusted to protect you, to have your back. No more. You're going to have to trust me and not your father or your mother. Not your family, but me and me alone. What does Abram have? A handful of magic beans. Not much. What would you do? Here's a God who's promising something, what you want, and it was attractive. This is what you want, isn't it, Abram? This is what he wants. If there is a future, he doesn't want it to be given to his to Eleazar, somebody who's not of Abram and Sarah. He wants it to be his own child. That's where the future is. Look at what God offers, and it's an incredible offer. He asks him to go from your country, your relatives, your father's house, to the land which I will show you. Now, I kind of like that, because what he's saying to Abram is that I will provide a place for you. You will not be homeless, but it won't be your father's home. I'm going to take you to some place. I will give you a home. I will provide for you a place and new relationships. But it's all through God. It's all through this strange new God with an unproven track record as far as Abram is concerned. But God says, I will make you a great nation. I will make you a great nation. This is where God asserts himself. And I will bless you. Remember what I said a few moments ago, that God is the one who actually wants to bless us? Can you imagine that? The creator of the cosmos wants to bless us. And it does, and not just have it stop with us at our doorway or with our generation, but the children to come after us. And I will bless you and make your name great. Who wouldn't like to have a great reputation? A sterling image. To be known by others. To be thought well of by the community. Oh yeah, we love it. We want to be known. We want a reputation. I will make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. Can you imagine being a blessing? God working through you? Me? Yes, us, to be a blessing to others. And so he continues, and I will bless those who bless you. Okay, that's nice. And the one who curses you, I will curse. There's protection. Wow. I will curse those who curse you, and I will bless you. I will help those and assist those who help you. And in you, all the families of the earth, they shall be blessed. What an extraordinary promise. One man, one man, one man. Will you be that one? You see, I think there are still some Abrams in the world today. You may have a little bit of Abram in you. And after 75 years, it's looking pretty dim and pretty grim. The future, the window's beginning to shut. But when God shows up, it's an open window. Up to this point, all Abram can see is what's holding him back. His country, his kinfolk, his father, his mother, they've all had children, but he has nothing to show. Not yet. But when God shows up, God opens the window and says, Abram, what about this? Will you come, Abram? To do so, to inherit what I have for you, you'll have to leave behind everything. I will be your source. It won't be in your paycheck. won't be from your employers. Protection won't be afforded by your kinfolk anymore. I will protect you. Bless those who bless you. Curse those who curse you. I am your protection. I will make you great. I will make you famous. What an extraordinary promise. Who's going to do all this? God. This is what he lays on the table. Now, either this is a very boastful God, or this is a God who knows what he can deliver. I will do this. What is expected of Abram? That he's willing to get up and go. Will you trust God? Handful of magic beans. Wow, a promise. How does Abram know? All he has is a promise, a word from God. I don't think you can take that down to the bank and negotiate it, and that they're going to loan you a lot. I'll repay. Really? They're going to check out your references. They want to know how much you make. They want to know if you're gainfully employed right now or how long it's been since you were last employed. What do you have for assets? You see, it's all fear-based. Not this. It's simply God saying, here I am, Abram. What about it? Trust me. Trust me? I don't even know you. But what God lays on the table is an open window, a window of opportunity. Trust me, Abram. This is a God who was looking all over the world, I think, and he finally settled on this one man. What if there's just one? What if there's one in every church, one in every community, one in your family? What if there's just one? Because that's all it takes for God to start. Just one who's willing to take the risk that God means what he says and can deliver on the promise. Will you be that one? Will you? Exalted Father is what Abram means. Will you trust God? Will you take him at his word? That's the covenant, the offer that God lays on the table. So I call this the courtship phase. God is approaching. He's offering sweet talk. Well, Abram, what do you think? You want to date me? You want to go on a walk? You want to go steady? You want to walk together with me? Do you trust me? Come on, Abram, let's go. I will be your source. All it takes is one person to respond to God in trust, to change the face of the world. I believe that we have a God who wants to bless, not just us. You see, what's fascinating about this? This is a God who is not geographically bound. This is a God offering a projection of power in a distant land. Up until that time, household gods, well, they're good for you and your household, but not much further than that. Maybe you have a God here that can reach to the edge of Milton, but in Colchester, he ain't God. He doesn't have any power there. But this God is saying, hey, I'm going to take you where I will take you. I have more power than you know. My power projects far and wide. This is a God who is not geographically bound. And as for all families of the earth, this is a God who thinks big. So no matter how big your ideas are for yourself, whatever ambitions of self-aggrandizement that we have, this is a God who thinks even bigger. And guess what? It's not just for you. It's not just for you. It's not just for you to bless you. It's to bless all families of the earth. It's for everyone. This is a God who thinks big. And if you had read the story immediately preceding, you would have discovered it was about Babel. And God recognized that all of the inhabitants of the earth were evil. And so he was looking for a way to counteract that. Just one person who wasn't out to make a name for himself like they were when they came together in Babel. One person who will trust him and allow God to make a name for him. You see, this is a whole different way that this God wants to work. And he's just looking for one to stand out in that world, to be a people through whom he can work to bless every family, every nation, every person of the world. This is a God who is not bound by time either. To the generations ahead, for all time, you're going to find out more about that covenant. But this is a God who projects into the future and thinks he can deliver to all generations. Imagine that. This is a God who isn't bound by geography or time or human expression. Abram, it isn't about you or your loins, your ability to produce offspring. You failed, but I can do what you and Sarah can't. God has the ability. And so here's Abram. So when God comes to you, what do you see? Your own reflection? Are you going to look in the rearview mirror and say, I don't think so. I don't want to go. I don't trust you. I don't know. Will you choose your familiar and fall backward? Or will you see the window as open? Open to you, a window of heaven, a promise. Do we trust God? What do you think God can do with you? If God is who he says he is, well, I think he could work with us. He's not limited by my limits or your imagination or by the resources that we currently possess. This is a God of unlimited power. And guess what? He wants to bless. He wants to bless. That is extraordinary. So what about it? Is there an Abram inside you? Is there a stirring inside you? Someone who wants to say, okay, I'll go. I'm ready. Where do we start? Is this the day? Is this the time? Are you ready? Let's pray.